Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Midland Reporter Telegram, Friday, November 11, 2022, Volume 94, Number 176, read by Leah. Grand Jury Indicts Four Trinity Administrators, by Stuart Doreen. Four Trinity School of Midland administrators were indicted by a Midland County grand jury this week. District Attorney Laura Nodolf first confirmed to the Reporter-Telegram on Thursday that Shelby Hammer, Todd Fries, Crystal Myers, and Adrienne Clifton were indicted for charges related to their arrests in February. It was earlier this year that the four were charged with professional failure to make required child abuse reports, intentional conceal, a state felony. A Reporter-Telegram article stated that the arrests were related to alleged assaults that took place for 4 months in 2019. According to an arrest affidavit, the victim was forensically interviewed by the Midland Children's Advocacy Center on February 22. At the time, Hammer acted as the head of school, Fries, the middle school and upper school dean of students, Myers, the head of middle school, and Clifton, the assistant head for administration / director of admission. There have been no reports as to whether any of the four have left Trinity. In May, a Midland County grand jury no-billed or failed to indict five Midland Christian School officials. Arrests in both cases happened within weeks of each other. Those former Midland Christian educators have since sued the City of Midland, the Midland Police Department, and Detective Jenny Alonzo, following the exoneration of the five on false allegations that they failed to report a sexual assault. The Trinity School sent out a letter to its school family on Wednesday evening, alerting them of the indictments. "I am saddened and deeply disappointed to learn today that the grand jury opted to move forward with charges against our four administrators," Michael McWilliams, the school board's president, wrote. "While I'm stunned personally about the decisions made today, I look forward to the opportunity for due process. We continue to support our administrators, and I remain hopeful for a time in the near future where they can return to serving Trinity School's highest priorities, the safeguarding of students, the delivery of our school's mission, and the preservation of Trinity School today and into the future." An attorney for one of the Trinity administrators, Brian Carney of Midland, told the Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, "It seems that the district attorney allowed themselves to be bullied into allowing Detective Alonzo misuse and distort the law against these people." The City of Midland and Midland Police Department didn't comment on the indictments. Attorneys for Trinity Administrators Eager to Defend Clients, by Stuart Doreen. On Wednesday, a Midland County grand jury indicted four Trinity School of Midland administrators. On Thursday, the legal battle started. The Reporter-Telegram spoke to two attorneys representing at least two of the Trinity administrators, Shelby Hammer, Todd Fries, Crystal Myers, and Adrienne Clifton, and their comments and actions provided evidence they are eager to not only defend their clients, but also put the Midland Police Department and the processes they follow on trial. Midland attorney Brian Carney stated to the Reporter-Telegram on Thursday that a Midland Police Department detective was misusing the law to carry out her vendetta against law-abiding lifetime educators. "These are professionals with pristine histories dating back decades," Carney wrote. "To see them get caught up in the false narrative of people looking to advance their careers is heartbreaking. Lastly, it's worrisome that the Midland Police Department lacks any adult supervision that would stop Detective Jenny Alonzo from misusing the law to carry out her vendetta against law-abiding lifetime educators." Members of the Midland Police Department are already part of a lawsuit filed in federal court by former Midland Christian School officials. Alonzo, in particular, is identified in the lawsuit, Jared Lee et al. Versus City of Midland et al. In the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Texas. The lawsuit states the defendant's actions, both jointly and severally, deprived plaintiffs of their protected rights under the U.S. Constitution, federal law, and Texas state law. Frank Sellers is a lawyer representing Myers. He already filed a pair of motions in the 142nd District Court, including one for a speedy trial. One motion states, 257 days have passed from the arrest to the filing of the motion for a speedy trial, and neither the defendant nor defense counsel has committed any act or omission contributing to this delay. Sellers later told the Reporter-Telegram that if a trial has not happened within a year of the arrest, then he will file motion to dismiss. He told the Reporter-Telegram that this indictment is cover for MPD Detective Jenny Alonzo and Midland County District Attorney Laura Nodolf for the civil suit that has been filed and the future lawsuits that will be filed against them. The second motion filed Thursday addressed the admissibility of polygraph examination results. A polygraph report attached to the motion shows a federally licensed polygrapher found no deception in Myers' answers that she was never informed by anyone of abuse to the students involved. Nodolf told the Reporter-Telegram on Thursday that her office has filed a response motion. Grand jury indicts three ex-MCS leaders by Stuart Doreen. Three former Midland Christian School administrators have been indicted, according to Midland County officials. The Midland County Public Information Officer, Tate Owen, stated Thursday evening that Jared Lee and Dana Ellis were indicted. Matt Counts also was indicted, according to his attorney. The indictments were handed out this week and are not related to the arrests that took place earlier this year. The indictments say the state has reasonable cause to believe that a child had been abused and that officials failed to make a report, not later than 48 hours after the hour that he or she first had reasonable cause to believe that the abuse took place. This failure to report was made with the intent to conceal the abuse against the peace and dignity of the state. Lee was the former school superintendent. Ellis was the former secondary principal. Counts is a former assistant secondary principal. All three were among the five administrators and staff members arrested in February for failure to report with intent to conceal neglect or abuse. A Midland County grand jury in May no-billed or chose to not indict the five. Since then, the five administrators, including Lee, Counts, and Ellis, have sued the City of Midland, the Midland Police Department, and Detective Jenny Alonzo. The lawsuit states the defendant's actions, both jointly and severally, deprived plaintiffs of their protected rights under the United States Constitution, federal law, and Texas state law. Jeff Parris, the attorney for Matt Counts, stated MPD didn't speak to many of the students who witnessed the accident. He also said MPD targeted the three MCS administrators, even though there were others, including school nurses, staff at a medical clinic, and teachers, who would have had the same duty to report it. They thought it was an accident, Porras said. They charged the three who are suing the city. Here is Porras' statement in its entirety. Earlier today, I was notified that my client, Matthew Counts, had again been charged with an offense initiated by the Midland Police Department. We were recently made aware that MPD was once again seeking to charge him. The most recent false accusation led by one of the same investigators whose prior false charges were dismissed in May. That prior false arrest is the subject of a federal lawsuit against the MPD and, among others, this same detective. We are extremely disappointed, though not entirely surprised, with the vindictive actions of the detective, and equally disappointed that the leadership at MPD did not address the obvious conflict and assign an unbiased investigator to review a case as shoddy, poorly investigated, and lacking as the newly filed one. The false allegation is that the accused failed to report and attempted to conceal child abuse and concerns a teenage student in a Midland Christian School classroom being struck in the head accidentally last November 2021. All those present who saw it have described it as an accident, including the student himself. Accidents are specifically excluded from the definition of abuse in the statute being used to charge the accused. Neither Matt Counts nor the other two educators charged today saw the student at all that day and were only later made aware of the accident. Their only commonality is that they are plaintiffs in a lawsuit against the city and MPD personnel, including the same detectives responsible for these latest false charges. The school nurses, the classroom teacher, the student's parents, and personnel at a Midland medical clinic all saw the student that very day and all have the same duty to report abuse, which cannot be delegated to anyone else. None of them were charged. Each of these false accusations that hang over an innocent man's head is another day of injustice for him and his family. Accordingly, we have already notified the court that we are ready for trial and have requested a speedy trial and look forward to defending this false, vindictive accusation in front of a jury of unbiased Midland County citizens at the court's earliest convenience. Editor's note: mugshots of the three could not run because of deadline constraints. MCT debuts new LED wall by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Phase 1 of the $7 million capital campaign to upgrade the Midland Community Theater concluded 2 weeks ago with the final installment and finishing touches to the new LED wall in Davis Theater 1. Donors gathered Thursday morning to celebrate the combined financial effort and admire the new feature granted to the arts community and built by Rebel Media. Phases 2 and 3 include the lobby expansion and educational spaces. Beside modern looks, the five walls, spanning from right to left stage, provide two main factors to the community entertainment joint. The first, more money. By having the projection walls, wooden sets, and props won't need to be built for every single production aspect, therefore saving the crew in construction costs. The second can be found in the season's lineup. According to MCT Executive Director Tim Jepson, the $1 million installation permits longtime desired shows to hit the local stage. For years, I've been thinking about doing Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and one of the reasons I wouldn't is because you have to go so many different places. The factory, the house, the candy store, the place where he mixes the chocolate, Jepson explained. How do we build all these different locations? Now, with these projection walls, we have the ability to transport the audience. Although Jepson said it'll probably take a year for everyone to learn the new technology's capacity, the projections make MCT's first performance in the 2022 community favorite closer, A Christmas Carol. In addition, the theater also plans to host other community-oriented events, such as their free showing of The Grinch Who Stole Christmas at 6 p.m. Sunday. In the end, Midland Community Theater remains thankful for its generous friends and supporters dedicated to making the impossible possible for West Texas artists. It's amazing how much this community supports not only nonprofits, but the arts world, Jepson said. We had a couple foundations that really saw the need, not only for the lobby expansion, but the educational space and the LED wall, and they put lead gifts together that helped convince other people to support that. We're very fortunate MCT has been a result of that for 77 years. Small bites, hash browns, and high hopes resembles Midland persistence through New York-style bagels. After rooting her obscure sickness back to a mysterious cyst found in her brain, Chelsea Franklin started baking from home. unable to leave the house and maintain her job at the garlic press due to extreme light sensitivity, the waitress cook knew she needed to bring in extra money to help support her family. One thing led to the next, and a successful pickup and delivery bagel business took flight. Now, 8-month-old hash browns and high hopes, equipped with a playful color scheme and logo, floats through the Midland grapevine of local must-tries deemed by community members. Operating out of their home, Chelsea, her husband Brian Franklin, and their 4 kids truly forged the business into a family affair. Learning how to balance being a family first, but also business first bunch, remains difficult, Brian said. However, with hopes to open a brick and mortar sometime in 2023, the Franklin crew know the sacrifices stand necessary. Ironically, hash browns don't make the menu quite yet, an aspect Brian found quite funny. Instead, a large variety of New York-style bagels, thick in size and powerful in flavor. Using the boiling-first method, the extensive rising-resting proofing process can be seen through the wholly cooked dough, nice and lightly crisped on the outside, but chewy and moist on the inner. By perfecting her own recipes, Chelsea takes pride in the saving grace and remains grateful for the customers who've graciously helped them grow so quickly. However, family always finds a way back to the top of the list. We're hoping to bring a different experience to Midland and just be good role models for our kids, Chelsea declared. Wondering what to include in your next order from Hash Browns and High Hopes? Here's what you need to know. 1606 North Big Spring Street. Hot Bites. Since the bagel-making process still holds customization created by Chelsea, the baker can accommodate most allergies. Keto and gluten-free bagels run at $4 per bagel, or $22 per half dozen, and come in 4 flavors, plain, everything, cheddar, and pumpkin pecan. As for sweets, choose between cinnamon rolls, $20 for a 5-pack, blueberry muffins, $18 for a 5-pack, or a coffee cake loaf, $16. When gluten-free items are made, Chelsea and Brian go through an intense cleaning of all items used in the cooking process and cook all of the gluten-free orders at once so cross-contamination can be avoided. As for regular sweet rolls, customers can choose from 17 flavors, spanning from original, chocolate chip, and banana nut to Twix, raspberry cheesecake, orange cream, fruit pebbles, and peach cobbler. These run at $20 per half dozen and can be made vegan upon request. Bagels come in 9 flavors, plain, everything, cheddar, hash bagel, pesto, jalapeno, and cheddar. Everything in cheddar, French toast, and CCR, cinnamon cherry raisin. Those run at $25 per dozen, $15 per half dozen, and include smears. My favorite? The classic cream cheese. November special pumpkin, very reminiscent of Texas Roadhouse butter, and the cream cheese and chives. Lastly, the establishment also serves bagel bombs, rounds of bagel dough stuffed with goodies. These run at $15 for a pack of 6 and come in plain, filled with classic cream cheese, strawberry, and everything with herbed cream cheese and pumpkin. For an extra $4, these can also be made vegan. To see an even more detailed list of each item, visit bit.ly/3TMM8SY. Overall vibes. To support local doesn't only mean to go places with a physical address and a big fancy sign. It also means the little guys throughout the city filled with big dreams. Chelsea and Brian, along with co-partner Jonathan Gomez, remain prime examples. Not only do they care about creating tasty, desirable, good, but they also continuously want to accommodate each and every customer. By running the entire operation themselves, serving from their home, delivering to customers free of charge, The Franklin couple have built the business from the ground up, using the support and inspiration instilled in them from their employers at the Garlic Press. A true example of what it means to be hardworking, dedicated people of the community, Chelsea and Brian brought something to the tall city that can't be repeated at the drop of a hat. Sure, anyone could probably get the materials and make a New York-styled bagel. However, the blood, sweat, and tears laid in the foundation of Hash Browns and High Hopes makes the business unbeatable and therefore a pillar and building block for the local food scene. So next time you're craving a breakfast bite, make sure you skip the standard Starbucks line and call 432-517-5168. To place orders, call 432-517-5168 or message the Facebook page at https://bit.ly/3TMM8SY. Orders can be placed at any time and are made ready for pickup the next day. AAA Texas, Most Expensive Gas in West Texas, by Ben Schaefer. Midland drivers are paying the second highest gas price average in the state at $3.27 per gallon. AAA Texas reported the top five highest gas price averages this week out of the 27 largest metro areas the organization surveys were West Texas cities. The top five were in El Paso at $3.31 a gallon, Midland $3.27, Wichita Falls $3.25, Amarillo $3.24, and Odessa $3.22. The state average was $3.16. Midland's average price fell 4 cents this week, one of the higher decreases across the state, according to AAA Texas. The price is also 12 cents higher than last year and $1.25 lower than the record price set in June. Across West Texas, AAA Texas reported a 12 cent increase in Abilene. The price there sits at $3.22. The price in Amarillo jumped 11 cents. Lubbock showed a 4 cent increase to $3.17. El Paso a 7 cent decrease, and Odessa reported a 3 cent decrease. The price in San Angelo increased 8 cents to $3.17. According to AAA Texas, drivers in most areas of Texas experienced small gas price changes, with a few seeing large increases. The Texas state gas price average is 64 cents below the national average. Texas drivers are paying the lowest gas prices nationwide, with a state average of $3.16.
This is Reed, and this is the Odessa American for Friday, November 11th, 2022. ODC drops CVA for current media partners. The Odessa Development Corporation voted unanimously Thursday to replace CVA Advertising and Marketing with current media partners. The ODC's Marketing Compliance Committee met with Christy Calicote and Brittany Mann from Current Media, Hancock Media, and CVA recently to discuss how they would go about attracting new companies to Odessa. Quote, all three were very impressive, I have to say. I think it unanimous among all three of us that Christie's proposal was probably the most current, up-to-date on the digital. I think that's what tilted me in that direction, end quote, said board member Tim Eggman. Current Media will work with Craig Van Amberg, CVA's owner, through the transition period, Eggman said. Following the meeting, board member Chris Crow said it had been at least a decade since the ODC had gone out to bid for marketing. He said he found Current Media's ideas, quote, fresh, end quote. In other matters, the ODC also voted unanimously to go out to bid a second time for an auditing firm that will be responsible for looking at companies to make sure they are in compliance with their contracts before incentive payments are made. Crow has long said he is uncomfortable. The ODC's current auditing firm, Weaver, which also audits the city of Odessa's books. He also said the compliance committee has found issues Weaver had failed to find. Moreover, Crow said it has been a long time since that contract has been up for bid, too. Assistant City Manager Cindy Muncy reminded the board the request for proposals went out in July to a variety of companies. She said the purchasing department followed up with phone calls and sent emails, but didn't receive a response from them. In the end, only two companies submitted bids, and only one was qualified. Weaver, she said. The ODC voted last month to continue on with Weaver on a month-to-month basis. On Thursday, Muncy told the board she's not heard back from Axiom, which had expressed an interest in the contract after being contacted by Crow. Crow told his fellow members Thursday he has since reached out to Whitley Penn, which has an office in Odessa, and the firm expressed an interest in bidding on the contract. He also volunteered to reach out to the groups the purchasing department tried to contact to, again, remind them about the process if the board decided to try again. The board voted unanimously to go out to bid again and to allow Weaver to continue its work until further notice. The board also spent some time Thursday talking about amending the language used in incentive performance contracts, so everyone has a better idea about when capital expenditures qualify and what constitute a, quote, discrepancy, end quote, or, quote, construction, end quote. The board needs to determine, for example, if a company is in the construction phase, if it's only been plugging wells or conducting environmental studies, or must they have broken ground? Rather than, quote, make sausage in public, end quote, Board President David Bouton said he and the city's legal team would work on some proposals and get them back at a later date. Last month, Crow voted against paying Nacero its first $2 million incentive payment because Nacero included amongst its expenditures those made in 2018 to 2020, when the contract with the city wasn't signed until June 2021. He was the lone dissenting vote. Nacero plans to build a $7 billion natural gas processing and production facility near Penwell. The project is expected to create 3,500 construction jobs and 350 permanent jobs. Apache adds Delaware Basin properties. Area production in early 2023 expected to be flat. The Apache Corp says the Permian Basin was a key player in its successful third quarter with newly acquired properties in the Delaware Basin, augmenting its core production in the Midland Basin. President CEO John Christman reported from Houston that results in the Permian, quote, were particularly strong due to a variety of factors, including good underlying base production and new well performance, the timing and number of new completions and relatively minimal maintenance, midstream and weather-related downtime, end quote. Quote, in the first quarter of 2023, we expect that Permian Basin production will be flat to down as we experience a lull in new well connections and production to reflect the potential for winter weather-related downtime, end quote, he said. Quote, our capital budget next year will be $2 billion to $2.1 billion. This assumes 5 rigs in the Permian and up to 17 in Egypt, while activity in the North Sea and Suriname is projected to remain consistent with 2022 levels. Similar to our approach in 22, this incorporates what we believe is an appropriate view of inflationary impacts on the capital program, end quote. Both part of the Permian Basin, the Delaware and Midland Basins are sedimentary formations, with the Delaware lying under far west Texas and southeastern New Mexico. The Midland Basin is primarily east of there, with most of its oil and gas in Martin, Midland, Upton, Howard, Glasscock, and Reagan counties. Further reviewing Apache's global operations, Christman said drilling and recompletion programs in Egypt, quote, are progressing closer to our original plans for the year. The North Sea, after returning to production from seasonal turnarounds, incurred an unusually high amount of unplanned downtime in August and September, end quote, he said last Friday during the third quarter earnings call of his parent company, the ARA Corp. Quote, during the third quarter, we generated more than $600 million of free cash flow. On the environmental, social, and governance front, I'm pleased to announce that we have successfully delivered on our 2022 goal to reduce flaring in Egypt. Today, new projects are reducing routine upstream flaring by 40%, enabling us to compress the gas into sales lines and deliver it to Egyptian consumers for cleaner burning affordable fuel. Turning to our fourth quarter outlook, capital investment is projected to be around $450 million, and our full year guidance of $1.725 billion remains unchanged, end quote. Chief Financial Officer Steve Riney said Apache had consolidated net income of $422 million. Quote, our quarterly results include items outside of APA's core earnings, end quote, Riney said. Quote, the most significant of these was a $275 million charge for the impact of the United Kingdom Energy Profits Levy. Net income for the third quarter was $651 million, or $1.97 per diluted common share, end quote. Riney said Apache's total debt increased by $244 million to $5.5 billion, with a partial funding of the Delaware Basin acquisition at the end of July. ConocoPhillips Basin production strong. Third quarter report cites industry-wide need for investments. ConocoPhillips Chairman CEO Ryan Lance says inflation and supply chain constraints continue to hamper the energy industry and the world economy. In his Houston-based company's third quarter earnings report last Friday, Lance said that's particularly true in United States oil shale areas like the Permian Basin, quote, where rapidly escalating costs combined with extremely tight supply are limiting the pace of industry-wide production growth, end quote. Quote, we believe the world will need investments in medium and long cycle production in addition to U.S. shale plays, and ConocoPhillips is well positioned to win in any environment, end quote, he said. Quote, we remain committed to delivering on our triple mandate of responsibly and reliably meeting energy transition pathway demand, delivering competitive returns on and off capital, and progressing toward achieving our net zero operational emissions ambition, end quote. Lance said ConocoPhillips' third quarter production in the lower 48 states marked a record of more than 1 million barrels of oil per day. Quote, we anticipate further growth in the fourth quarter, end quote, he said. Quote, we recently announced a new medium-term methane intensity commitment, and from a strategic perspective, I wanted to provide an update on our global liquefied natural gas initiatives. First, we were recently selected to participate in Qatar's North Field South project, following our selection earlier this year to participate in the North Field East, which adds to our long positive relationship with Qatar Energy. Quote, second, we agreed to terminal services for a 15-year period at Britain's vital LNG import terminal in Germany. And third, we continue to progress our Port Arthur LNG project with Sempra, which we expect to reach a final investment decision on early next year. Overall, we continue to believe the substitution of natural gas in place of coal represents an opportunity for significant reductions in global greenhouse gas emissions, end quote, Lance said. Quote, this should drive global LNG demand and related opportunities well into the future, end quote. Chief Financial Officer Bill Bullock said ConocoPhillips' worldwide production was over 1,750,000 barrels of oil per day in the third quarter. Quote, for the fourth quarter, we don't expect any material turnaround impacts, end quote, Bullock said. Quote, lower 48 production averaged a record of 1,013,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day, including 668,000 from the Permian, 224,000 from the Eagle Ford, and 96,000 from the Bakken. Cash provided from operating activities was $8.7 billion. Quote, this included a $15 billion benefit from working capital, primarily due to the timing of Norway tax payments and lower receivables, end quote, Bullock said. Quote, excluding working capital, cash from operations was $7.2 billion. Quote, on capital, we invested $2.5 billion back into the business in the third quarter, including around $300 million for acquisitions. This resulted in free cash flow of $4.7 billion, which more than covered the $4.3 billion we returned to shareholders in the quarter. Ending cash and short-term investments were $10.7 billion September 30th, up from $8.5 billion June 30th. We still expect full-year production of 1.74 million barrels of oil equivalent per day, with a fourth-quarter guidance range of 1.74 million to 1.8 million BPD, end quote. Teacher prep program still taking applications. Hector County ISD now has its second group of teachers going for certification since Odessa Pathway to Teaching became an in-district program. It's the sixth cohort since OPT began. ECISD previously collaborated with TNTP, which stands for the New Teacher Project, to offer OPT. Director of Talent Development Deborah Bynum said prospective teachers apply for the program, and if they're accepted, they start their certification test preparation and content work. Quote, they do that in the spring and work toward taking their certification exams. In June, they do what we call pre-service training. For this year, that will be from May 30th to June 30th. During pre-service training, they're getting classroom experience, and they're also receiving instruction and working on building their skills to make them effective in the classroom, end quote, Bynum said. To help teachers prepare for the test, they offer tutoring in specific content areas, and there are online programs they have access to that they can also do independent study, Bynum said. If they aren't successful with their test the first time, then they look at the test results and help them build a specific study plan and find the right resources, Bynum said. She added that they work on test-taking skills as well. Osborne said they feel ECISD's program is the most supportive educator preparation program out there. Quote, it's really beneficial to us to be embedded in Ector County ISD because our candidates are taught the culture of ECISD from day one. They're taught what it means to be a teacher in ECISD from day one, how to be a teacher in ECISD, end quote, Osborne said. They also get classroom experience and are partnered with a mentor teacher and a field supervisor, who is, one, a member of the talent development team, who provides continual feedback, Executive Director of Talent Development Ashley Osborne said. Quote, they get to try some things out in the classroom and get continuous feedback and really improve their skills with students versus just learning through online methods or through textbooks what it means to be a teacher. They actually get the hands-on experience before they are in a classroom of their own, end quote, Osborne added. Osborne noted that is not the case with many of the alternative certification programs out there. Quote, we really feel like the Odessa Pathway to Teaching model best prepares candidates for what they'll truly experience in the classroom before they ever have the responsibility of a classroom on their own, end quote, Osborne said. She noted that there are several application deadlines for Odessa Pathway to Teaching. Quote, we have a priority deadline, a fall deadline, a winter deadline, and then the final deadline. That really helps us sort of convert people through the pipeline in a more supportive way because we're in constant communication with them. Debbie's already working, and her team is already working, on interviewing those that have already submitted their applications, end quote, Osborne said. She added that some of the teachers in classrooms today have a bachelor's degree, which is one requirement for Odessa Pathway to Teaching. Because ECISD is a district of innovation, it can hire teachers who have bachelor's degrees but aren't certified yet. Working with human resources, Bynum said they are trying to get names and emails of those teachers so they can communicate with them about participating in OPT. In the first group of teachers ECISD got when the program became part of ECISD, Bynum said they had about 100 applicants last year, and they accepted 40 or so into the program. Through attrition, they wound up with about 22 that are currently active in the program. Quote, we have to allow for that. Attrition happens for various reasons. Family emergencies, spouses get transferred, and so they relocate, things like that, end quote, Bynum said. Osborne said they have annual recruitment goals that are based on the number of applicants they are hoping to see. Quote, because we know that of all the applicants that we get, not everybody is actually going to make it into one of our classrooms, because our kids deserve the best, and so there are some criteria that the applicants must meet along the way, that if they are unable to meet those criteria too, then they will not be able to continue with the program, end quote, Osborne said. Quote, a good example of that is of those applicants, some people didn't even have a bachelor's degree yet, and that is a requirement for us. Another eligibility requirement is to have at least a 2.5 GPA. If a candidate applies, they may have a bachelor's degree, but if they don't have 2.5 GPA, then we wouldn't be able to enroll them in our program. That is TEA requirement, 2.5 GPA overall, or a 2.5 GPA in their last 60 credit hours. There are some TEA requirements that we're bound by, and then there are some programmatic requirements as well, end quote, Osborne said. Bynum said many educator preparation programs charge application fees and test preparation fees, but they don't. Candidates will have to pay for testing, but that's a state-required fee. They also have to pay apply for their certificate and fingerprinting. The district charges $3,900, and it can be collected as payroll deduction once they start teaching over 2 years. Osborne said when they're on the intern certificate, they are the teacher of record in an ECISD classroom, and they're earning a first-year teacher salary, which is $58,750 for ECISD. She added that is when they start the payroll deductions. Osborne added that it's not easy to earn teacher certification. Quote, that's by design, because we have an awesome responsibility to the students to have a teacher that is well-prepared, that is capable of the task at hand, which is teaching young minds, so it isn't necessarily easy, and that's okay, end quote, Osborne said. Bynum said individuals who want to be certified to teach early childhood through 6th grade or 4th grade through 8th grade now have to take and be successful on an additional test, the Science of Teaching Reading Test. Quote, we have a huge initiative across the state to make sure that our students have those fundamental skills of being successful in reading because research has proven over and over again that if they're not reading on grade level by a certain point, then it becomes more challenging for them to be successful academically. So they have to pass the Science of Teaching Reading. Then as they come into the classroom, they also complete a reading academy during their first year of teaching. There are more requirements now as they move toward that certification, but it's just building their tool set and giving them the skills that they need to help their students be successful in learning, end quote, Bynum said. Osborne said they feel the OPT program is one of the most supportive out there. Quote, we are going to help prepare our candidates to the very best of our ability so that there's not any barriers to them becoming certified that we can prevent, end quote, Osborne said. Quote, Debbie mentioned some content preparation and test preparation. That's something that we offer to our candidates that other programs don't necessarily offer, end quote. ECISD also has a program for paraprofessionals who want to become teachers. Quote, they may not have a bachelor's degree yet, but we are supporting them in seeking that bachelor's degree. We have an academy that they can attend called the Aspiring Teacher Academy that will build their toolbox. So eventually, before they ever have a classroom of their own, they have that skill set. Once they get their bachelor's degree, they can join our Odessa Pathway to Teaching program to get that certification, if they so choose, end quote, Osborne said. MCT unveils new LED walls. Midland. When audience members attend the Midland Community Theater's production of A Christmas Carol later this month, they'll notice something different with the set. That's because a new 1,600-square-foot LED wall and wing panels were installed in the large Davis Theater 1. MCT unveiled to the public the new LED wall Thursday. The new technology helps for a variety of possibilities with the MCT's production and rentals and will be put to use for the upcoming production of A Christmas Carol, which begins on November 25th and runs until December 17th. The new LED walls are a part of the theater's $7 million capital campaign. The walls themselves cost about $1 million. In addition to the LED walls, the campaign includes expansion to the lobby, as well as an expansion to the education space. Quote, what's really nice is that we've been able to complete the fundraising part of this, but we've also been able to get these LED walls put in prior to the construction project in our lobby and our educational spaces, end quote. Executive Director of the Midland Community Theater, Timothy Jepson, said. Quote, our audience is going to be seated through some construction areas through the next year and a half, but they'll get to enjoy phase one of this. Getting the LED walls installed was a huge part of following the audience to see what the fundraising campaign resulted in, end quote. Fundamentally, Jepson says the biggest challenge for the theater has been to adapt from always having to build everything for a show to now seeing what can be done with projections and actual physical objects, end quote. Quote, I want to stress that it's not all going to be projections, end quote, Jepson said. Quote, there will be physical objects put on the stage as well. A big thing is if you're going to do a show like Cinderella where you want to have a castle. Before, we were trying to build all these ginormous units with a staircase. Now you can have an image of a castle and a staircase. That makes it so much easier to physically do what you need to do, end quote. The projections will also allow Midland Community Theater to save on doing constructions on big sets. Quote, as far as storage goes, one of the biggest challenges is that we work in wood, end quote, Jepson said. Quote, but those things get torn down. It's really more a savings in construction and costs in addition to actually being able to change scenes much more quickly, end quote. With the LED walls, Jepson talked about an image that will be used in the upcoming production of A Christmas Carol that will only be used for 45 seconds. Quote, that's something we would never consider doing if we didn't have the projections, end quote, Jepson said. The LED walls also allow for the MCT to do other productions that would have been too difficult to do because of the set designs, such as Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which the Midland Community Theater will be putting on in February 2023. Quote, for years I've been thinking about doing Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and one of the reasons I wouldn't do it is because you have so many different places, and the question was, how do we build all these different locations? End quote, Jepson said. Quote, now with these projection walls, you have the ability to transport the audience to the factory, to the house, to the candy store, and back to the factory. You can do all of these things with projections rather than having to build everything. Even our 2023 opening musical is an example of something that we can do that we weren't able to do before. End quote. Jepson said he discovered these LED walls from another theater, the Hale Center, that was using them in Salt Lake City, Utah. These are also similar LED screens that the Utah Jazz of the National Basketball Association uses at their home, Vivint Arena. Quote, the company that installed it is Rebel Media, end quote, Jepson said. Quote, they just replaced all the LED screens where the Utah Jazz play basketball. This is the same LED technology that the Utah Jazz are using for their arena. Rebel Media is based out of Salt Lake City. I contacted them and their owner came out here several times to check out the progress of this being installed, end quote. The screens were made in China and shipped all the way to Midland, where it took 2 weeks to install. When talking about what it's been like for the MCT to get adjusted to the new LED walls, Jepson compared it to going from driving a Corolla to a Lamborghini. Quote, we've been driving a Corolla for years, and now somebody just handed us a Lamborghini, end quote, Jepson said. Quote, it may take some getting used to how the bells and whistles. The first show won't be the most different options that we do because we're learning how to use the technology, end quote. But this won't completely replace the traditional sets at Midland Community Theater, which has numerous different small stages at its location, as well as the Yucca Theater in downtown Midland where Summer Mummers takes place. Quote, what's really nice is that Midland Community Theater has three different performance spaces, end quote, Jepson said. Quote, we installed this in Theater 1. We still have Theater 2, which is your traditional black box space. We'll still do shows in there that are much more traditional. We still have the Yucca Theater where we do Summer Mummers. It does change what we'll do in this particular space, but it doesn't change the same type of theater that we've done in the past. Probably the biggest change that you'll see, for example, is that we've done a September musical in the smaller theater, and now we're moving that extra musical into this theater. We're doing Rock of Ages next year, so that's our brand new musical in here. We're adjusting some of our programming based on the changes in the theater, end quote. Jepson, who is also directing A Christmas Carol, says that the cast members have been ecstatic to be a part of a production that will get to use the LED walls for the first time. Quote, they're excited that they get to be the first ones to use this particular stuff, end quote, Jepson said. Quote, we just had auditions for Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and we'll start rehearsals for that as soon as Christmas Carol opens. Charlie and the Chocolate opens in February. You have two casts that are ecstatic to be the first ones to use the new technology, end quote. The LED walls were installed about 2 weeks ago, but originally Jepson wasn't certain if they would be done in time for A Christmas Carol. There was an original plan of what to do in case they weren't. Quote, one of the reasons why it has worked out so well for Christmas Carol is that we have a set built and it's been around for years and years now, end quote, Jepson said. Quote, we knew that if it didn't get installed for A Christmas Carol, we could do the show in the same tradition that we've done. But once we realized that it was going to be installed, I'm probably going to be using less than 50% of the set pieces that we already have, and most of what we're using are projections, but we are still using the traditional set pieces, end quote. He talked about how thankful he and the rest of MCT has been for the community's support in helping with the fundraiser. Quote, it's amazing how much community supports not only the nonprofits, but also the arts as well, end quote, Jepson said. Quote, we've had a couple of foundations that saw the need, not only for the lobby expansion, but also the LED walls, and they put lead gifts together to help convince people to support this. Foundations and individuals have driven this capital campaign, and we're thankful for their support, end quote. For more information about the Midland Community Theater and the upcoming production of A Christmas Carol, go to tinyurl.com/5HC8DNZS. Odessa Shakespeare Festival returns. For 8 years, the Odessa Shakespeare Festival has sought to captivate audience members and give them a chance to see what a play in William Shakespeare's time would have been like. This year, the festival returns with the traveling troupe of members from the Texas Shakespeare Festival next week at Odessa College's Globe Theater. There will be two shows open to the general public, starting with Macbeth at 7 p.m. November 18th and A Midsummer Night's Dream at 7 p.m. on November 19th. More than 3,000 students from all over West Texas will attend shows during the week. Quote, this is one of my favorite things that we get to do, end quote, Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Hamm said. Quote, I grew up in theater and performed shows at the Globe in my youth. It's a very special, sacred place for me. To be able to present professional Shakespeare actors residing the parts in the most exact replica of the Globe Theater in the United States, there's nothing like it. To know that we have over 3,000 students from all across West Texas coming to see it makes me excited, end quote. Students will be coming from places including Andrews, Fort Davis, Fort Stockton, as well as Odessa with Bowie Middle School. Quote, "That's what's really cool to me," end quote, Ham said. Quote, "It's not just our local schools, it's all of the schools from around the basin. This year is especially exciting because we received a grant from the King Foundation that paid for the admission of every student to come through the doors this year," end quote. Last year's festival featured the plays Twelfth Night and As You Like It. Macbeth has been revered as one of Shakespeare's greatest tragedies. The show is a haunting tale of political ambition, superstition, madness, and murder. A Midsummer Night's Dream is considered Shakespeare's most popular comedy, with its story of love triangles and chaotic situations. Quote, "Macbeth is my favorite Shakespeare play ever," end quote, Ham said. Quote, "It's always a treat to see that one performed. A Midsummer Night's Dream is one of the most performed Shakespeare play in the world. Plus, when I was in high school, that was the show that I did, so that play has a special place in my heart," end quote. The inaugural Odessa Shakespeare Festival took place in 2014, and since then has continued to grow in audience members. The festival didn't take place in 2020 due to COVID. Quote, "It's been growing steadily," end quote, Ham said. Quote, "We're really at capacity. I can't say enough about the work the Texas Shakespeare Roadshow does. They've been our resident company since the inception of this festival. They are always constant professionals. They're good with the kids. They put on an incredible show. It's going to be fantastic," end quote. For the Texas Shakespeare Festival, returning to Odessa each year has been the biggest highlight on the tour schedule. Quote, "We're thrilled to be returning," end quote, Director of Development for the Texas Shakespeare Festival, Matthew Simpson, said. Quote, "It is the highlight of our tour and our company to be performing in such an incredible space. Odessa College is such a wonderful host, and Odessa Arts does so many incredible things to make it a breeze for our company to come in and do their best work for so many West Texas students," end quote. For Simpson, the festival offers a chance for students outside of Odessa who may not have access to theater productions to see a show. Quote, "For us to be able to reach students, especially those from rural communities where their access to professional theaters is so hard to come by, it's such a treat for us," end quote, Simpson said. Quote, "Shakespeare was meant to be seen or heard. It was not meant to be read out of a book. If you don't have a professional theater near where you live, then you're not going to get that opportunity to experience it the way it was supposed to be experienced. To be able to bring that to so many kids is such a thrill for us to do," end quote. Ham said the festival is a unique experience that can't be replicated in any other community because a replica of the famous Globe Theater exists right here in town. It also helps people to understand Shakespeare better. Quote, "So many students study Shakespeare, but they don't think they understand it, or they think it's boring because they're sitting in a classroom, reading words on a page that may not make sense because they're structured differently," end quote, Ham said. Quote, "Once you see the actors on the stage, in the Globe, in costume with body language, all of a sudden those stories come to life. You find out that you've understood it all along, you just didn't know that. To be able to demonstrate that is so important because Shakespeare not only wrote stories that were timeless, since they're still being performed today, but he invented so many words and phrases that we use in everyday language, and we don't really understand that or appreciate that he added so much to the English language. We're continuing the tradition of keeping his words alive because they're just as relevant today as when they were written," end quote. Tickets for next week's shows can be purchased online at https://tinyurl.com/4ACVHFNY.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.